City. God save the United States and his honorable court.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is U.S. versus Thornton.
May it please the court, my name is Mikel Alawaye, and I'm here representing Mr. Thornton this morning. This appeal followed a conviction for possession, one count of possession for a firearm by a felon, and one count of possession of a firearm with an obliterated or altered serial number, and a timely notice of appeal was filed. My argument today will consist of Mr. Thornton's sentence under the Armed Career Criminal Act. If a defendant is convicted of possession of a firearm by a felon, their sentence may be enhanced pursuant to the Armed Career Criminal Act. Under that act, the defendant must have three previous convictions for violent felonies. Violent felony must have an element of the use of force, must be burglary, or involves potential risk of physical injury to another.
Miss Olo, how do you pronounce your last name?
Alawaye.
Alawaye.
Yes.
Ms. Alawaye. The government points out that in the PSR, at least this is my understanding of the argument, that in the PSR it reports that the amended criminal complaint to which Mr. Thornton pleaded says, and this is on page 29 of the government's brief, among other places, that Thornton knowingly entered a building of another Anthony Spann located at 632 Cooper in Elgin, Illinois, with the intent to commit a theft. Mm-hmm. Now, is it your position that the actual criminal complaint had to be in the record, or is it your position that that allegation, however we find out it was in the criminal complaint, is insufficient?
I think it's both. I think that here in this case, yes, the PSR did refer to the amended criminal complaint, but if they had the amended criminal complaint in front of them, and this was after Taylor, then they should have brought it forward and had it attached to the pre-sentence report.
But why, given the fact that hearsay evidence is acceptable in sentencing proceedings as long as it's reliable, why isn't this enough in the absence of some assertion on Mr. Thornton's part that the PSR did not accurately reflect what the criminal complaint said?
I think it's insufficient because Mr. Thornton, we don't know exactly what Mr. Thornton was convicted of doing. By looking at just the amended criminal complaint, we do not know the facts of conviction. Rather, we only know the facts preceding the conviction.
But I think that he pleaded guilty to this, to the charge in that amended complaint.
Yes, he did. But I believe that Mr. Thornton, I haven't seen anything but the police reports, and as we know after Shepard, police reports are not...
Right, no, we're not.
Right.
Worried.
Right. So I don't, but again, all we know is what he was charged with doing. We do not know what he was convicted of doing. I do not know what Mr. Thornton said or what he assented to and the facts that would lead up to that conviction. I have no idea.
But if he pleaded guilty, I guess what I'm concerned about, certainly if we had that actual amended criminal complaint in front of us, it seems to me that's the kind of thing the Supreme Court in Shepard said one can look to try to figure out whether a generic burglary falls within the ambit of the Armed Career Criminal Statute or not. And this is entering a building of another Anthony Spann. I mean, this looks like the kinds of things that Taylor would recognize as burglary.
Yes. However, but the Shepard also states you not only have the charging document, but you can look at the plea agreement, the plea colloquy. It has to have some comparable judicial record of this information. And
do you think Shepard means you have to look at all of those? I understood Shepard to say any one of those would be permissible, not that you had to look at all of them.
No, it says or. Shepard does. However, I believe in Lewis, in this court held that a judge is limited to those documents spelled out in Shepard and Taylor and any explicit factual finding made by the trial court. What matters, again, this court said what matters are the facts of conviction rather than the facts behind the conviction. And again, if you look at only the amended criminal complaint in this case, it was only the facts preceding the conviction. Again, we don't know exactly what he assented to, what he said in the plea colloquy in order to support his conviction for
burglary.
So what
you'd like for us to do is send it back and have that brought to the district court?
Exactly. what I would like is that this case to be remanded to the district court and have those supporting documents. Again, you know, we don't know exactly what he said.
I assume he objected to the reference to that particular document at the time of sentencing?
At the time of sentencing, his defense counsel did not make an explicit objection stating because under
Taylor...
Well,
how is this preserved for our decision?
It's preserved because he did object to that reference of residential burglary in the sentencing hearing. He did make it. It wasn't explicit. He didn't say Taylor, but he did make that objection. And even if that objection is not sufficient, the court committed plain error by failing to look at these documents. And if the court did not commit clear error, then it can be preserved under plain error. The error, it was error because they didn't look at these things.
How did he non-explicitly object?
He never said, defense counsel did not say he was objecting because those documents were not included in the pre-sentence report, but he did object to the fact that this is 1990 burglary was characterized as a residential burglary in the pre-sentence report. Although he did not say Taylor, he did not say documents, he did say, I object to the use of the residential burglary in 1990.
So is it your feeling then that guilty pleas like this can be a predicate offense for the Armed Career Criminal Statute only if you've got the plea colloquy in the record? Because it does seem to me, once you've pleaded guilty to an indictment, to an amended complaint, whatever, you have accepted that. You have waived the right to challenge the fact that you committed that offense.
I think that this is a case that fits under Shepherd because I understand what the pre-sentence report said, but again, it is a report by the probation officer about what the amended criminal complaint said.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's definitely a couple of layers of hearsay. I don't disagree with you at all about that. And if your argument was that Shepherd itself insists on the original document, I don't see that in Shepherd. One could look at Shepherd and see if that's a reasonable way to interpret it. But by the time you get to the language that the pre-sentence report says was in the complaint, it sounds to me like it has disambiguated the Illinois statute to the point where you could say it was residential burglary.
I think that you have to... I think that Shepherd does dictate that you need to look at these things because, you know, Mr. Thornton, his maximum, had he not been sentenced under this Armed Career Criminal Act, he would have been sentenced to a maximum of 10 years. Now he got about 20 with a minimum of 15. So I think if you're going to enhance those sentences as much as it was in this case, I think that if you have those documents in front of you, if the probation office has those documents available to them, then they should be attached and they should be looked at in order to enhance the sentences.
Well, is there any question from the record that your client pleaded guilty to the offense that is reflected in the amended complaint that's referenced in the PSR?
In his motion for a reduced sentence that he did pro se right after sentencing, he does not dispute that he was convicted of a burglary. He just doesn't. He says that it was not residential burglary. But because the Illinois statute says you can be convicted of burglary if you're entering a railroad car, for instance, I think it's important that we see exactly what he was, what he did.
Well, maybe I can refine my question a little bit. Is there, from the record as it stands now, is it clear that the guilty plea that he entered and was convicted on relates to the specific offense that is reflected in the amended complaint as described in the PSR?
Actually, the way that I read the record, the way that it is, I don't believe it does say that he was explicit that he entered the building of Anthony Spann with the intent to commit a crime. I do not believe that it says that. I think that the only thing that does say that is the pre-sentence report. And that's what was relied upon by the court. There's nothing else. My client does not dispute that he was convicted in 1990, but he does dispute the facts behind the conviction that were found in the pre-sentence report.
Is there any indication that there exists either a transcript or the ability to obtain a transcript of that plea colloquy?
I have no idea. All I know is, you know, of course, this court knows that the amended criminal complaint does exist. And I have recollections of my client, which unfortunately are 16 years old. So, no, there is no evidence that these things could be found. But if the amended criminal complaint can be found, I'm sure that other proceedings could be.
I would be too sure.
With respect to the PSR being sufficient under Shepherd, other circuits have said different. In Sanders, the Sixth Circuit was unable to determine solely from the wording of the PSR whether defendant's prior convictions were violent felonies. And in fact, in Sanders, the Sixth Circuit also expressed doubt, as to whether the PSR was sufficient to satisfy Shepherd, but they never reached a decision as to whether or not the PSR was sufficient. In the Tenth Circuit,
Could I just ask you, in those cases, was it the PSR simply describing a course of conduct, or was it the PSR purporting to quote from another document, such as a criminal complaint?
In Sanders, what they said is that, what the Sixth Circuit said in Sanders is that that the PSR was not even sufficient enough in order to figure out what he was convicted of. In other words, there was no information as to the statute under which he was convicted, and there was no information, it was the statute and there was something else, that no reference to whether or not it was a guilty plea or a jury trial. So there was insufficient evidence inside the pre-sentence report in Sanders in order to figure that out. But again, they found that the pre-sentence, even, you know, it's hearsay, but again, they found that the pre-sentence report was insufficient. And I believe in this case, or in this court, in Go, and I'm really sorry about this man's name, it's NGO, U.S. versus Go, this court stated that the defendant's sentence violated the Sixth Amendment because the trial court made findings beyond the information provided to it, the PSR, without conclusive significance of a prior judicial record. And I submit that this court implicitly agreed that the information contained in the PSR was not a comparable judicial record under
well,
required
but see, probation officers, in this case, may well have looked at those and included that without the document, just included what he read. Right.
That's true. But again,
and that's not impermissible, is it? I mean, probation officers do that. They talk with other people. They, you know, there's much hearsay in the pre-sentence report.
That's true. But I think it's more significant if it's under the Armed Career Criminal Act, and if defendants are enhanced, the sentence is enhanced as much as his Mr. Thornton's was. I think it's important that we look at the conclusive judicial record.
But see, that's arguing because of the amount of time you can give, we ought to have a different standard based on the severity of the sentence.
No, I do not purport to do that, but what I do say is that in this case with my client, I do think that the PSR should have been supported by more evidence.
But we don't write opinions just for you and your client.
No, you do not, but I don't purport to tell the court what to do in all cases.
Just in this one.
Yes. And I rest on the points on the rest of my brief. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Murray.
Good Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Tyler Murray on behalf of the United States, the appellee in this case. First, I'd like to clarify what exactly happened in the district court with respect to the armed career criminal enhancement. The pre-sentence report identified the defendant as an armed career criminal based on a 2001 felony domestic battery, a 1992 residential burglary, and a 1990 residential burglary that had been pled down to plain burglary. The sentencing court asked if there were any objections to the PSR. Instead of specifically objecting to the 1990 burglary, defense counsel said, "Well, I would note, Your Honor, that this has been pled down from residential burglary to burglary." And that was the end of it. There was no objection to the underlying factual basis contained in the PSR, and no objection to the nature or quality of evidence, here the PSR ostensibly quoting, maybe paraphrasing, the underlying amended criminal complaint.
See, that's what has me worried, because, you know, if the PSR had attached to it the amended criminal complaint, I really don't think we would be here on this point, at least. If it really said that Thornton, as quoted in your brief, knowingly entered the building, et cetera, that those are facts which, as I understand Shepard, that's the kind of document with the sort of reliability that the Supreme Court was looking for in Shepard, and then you take that set of facts back into Taylor, and you're right back into the residential burglary world. But the truth is, he pleads guilty to simple burglary, not to residential burglary. It's a result of whatever representation he had at that time. And you're stating that a paraphrase is just as good as an exact quote, is just as good as the real document, and I'm not sure I'm comfortable making that set of changes.
I don't even know if we get to the issue of the quality of the evidence submitted in support of the prior conviction. I mean, the Sixth Amendment guarantees a jury's fact-finding on a disputed fact essential to increase a potential sentence's ceiling. Here, the underlying fact isn't even disputed.
So, well, I'm not sure. It depends how you understand his objection, because certainly if the amended criminal complaint had just said Thornton committed simple burglary, something like that, then that's not good enough to use. And he's clumsily saying, "I only pleaded to burglary, and so you don't have the third predicate." And I understand fully, at least I assume the government's position is, if he had focused in on the absence of the amended criminal complaint, you guys would have wandered out and found it and brought it in, and that would have been the end of it. So I do understand that that's the point on the other side. But without that complaint, we don't really know how good a paraphrase the writer of the pre-sentence report came up with. And what if the building of another didn't mean a residence, for example? I don't know what building is located at 632 Cooper in Elgin. And it could be a tool shack, for all I know.
My reading of the statute is that it doesn't necessarily need to be a residence. Any building would qualify under Taylor as a violent felony for purposes of the Armed Career Criminal Act. So just the fact that it's a building answers the question.
What about an RV?
I think that would be debatable.
Okay.
And when you recounted what happened at the plea colloquy, or at sentencing, counsel for the defendant firmly said it was pled down from residential burglary to just plain burglary. So he conceded it?
Yes.
So, I mean, that's all that's in the record about whether it was residential or building or whatever, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So what we're left with is that the guilty plea is to simple burglary, not to residential burglary.
That's what we have in terms of the guilty plea. But we also know that we have a PSR that states what the charge was that he pled guilty to. And I would distinguish it from Shepard in that in Shepard the problem arose because you had a complaint that just parroted the language of a non-generic statute. So there the court really had no idea what the defendant there was pleading guilty to. A second distinguishing feature of Shepard is there the defendant did object to the underlying factual basis. So this case is really outside the realm of what the Supreme Court was dealing with in Shepard.
Well, and the elements of simple burglary under Illinois law include burglary to buildings other than residences. Is that not right?
It is. And if we had a
distinction between a residential burglary and a simple burglary, provided the burglary is to a building, doesn't make any difference here.
Correct. And if we had an amended complaint here that just tracked the language of the non-generic Illinois statute, then I think we would have a problem just relying on the PSR.
Because it could be a railroad car, it could be the RV, it could be
exactly
anything.
But that's not a problem that we have here.
But you really have, in order to rule for the government here, we have to accept what the PSR said, the amended criminal complaint said. Is that fair?
That's correct, and that is what I would submit the point of PSRs are. So sentencing hearings for the crime that is charged in the district court doesn't turn into a series of mini-trials on the prior violent felonies. That's why the district court says, here's the PSR. Any objections?
Well, but you're going two steps too far, I think, because you don't have a mini-trial if you have the document. As Judge Kaney said, you can get the amended criminal complaint, probably, and indeed that's what the government normally proffers when it's trying to get these sentencing enhancements. And both the Supreme Court and this court have said one of the reasons you don't have to go through the whole Booker business, the whole, you know, submission to a jury, is that there is a reliable judicial document, and we don't have anything like that. We have, you know, hopefully they're very professional people, but we have just the PSR.
And had there been an objection, the government would have gone back and retrieved an actual copy of the amended complaint. But without an objection, I think the district court is entitled to adopt and rely on the statements in the pre-sentence report.
And up until this time, nobody has tried to amend the record to actually get that complaint?
No.
This could all go away, I guess, if you found the amendment. But as Judge Wood pointed out, there was no objection or discussed with you. There was no objection. There was no objection. It was an implicit objection.
I would characterize it as a mere observation that the reasonable burglary charge been pled down to burglary. That was the end of it. And if there are no further questions,
thank you, Mr. Murray.
Thank you.
How much time? You have 1 minute left.
I think it's important to point out that the government did not put in their brief that the objection was waived. I think it's important that the government has not brought up this waiver of objection before today.
I think I brought it up.
Yes, you did. But I just want to point that out. And I do want to point out that the underlying facts of the burglary are disputed. Mr. Thornton does not say that he entered that building of Anthony Spann and Elgin. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And you were appointed to this case?
Yes.
Thank you very much for your diligent efforts on behalf of your client.
Thank you very much.